passage. On the contrary, it is evident that all this preparation aims at a knowledge of metaphysics and includes ideas which constitute the secrets of the law, as we have explained. In works on metaphysics, it has been shown that such knowledge, i.e., the perception of the active intellect, can never be forgotten. What means by that will have to let go. And this is meant by the phrase, as learning remaineth living. Ram says a certain type of knowledge can't be forgotten. It has nothing to do with memory. Okay. But that's not the point I want to mention over here. It's like this. He says, when bad and foolish men were reading such passages about the shame and flourish, they considered them to be a support of their false pretensions and of their assertion that they could, by means of an arbitrary combination of letters, form a shem. You see? That's what they thought. That they'll work out some way, you know, work the letters out in a way that they'll form a shem of Hirsch, which would act and operate miraculously when written or spoken in a certain particular way. I think we're all familiar with the concept. I mean, do you know about that, Michael? The idea of making a shem of Hirsch, like if you could pronounce a shem of Hirsch, you could do certain things tremendous.
What?
Right?
What?
Right? No, you should kill the shem of Hirsch. They put the shem of Hirsch in the garland's fire out over there.
Right?
No, we're reading such passages, so they're reading about the greatness of the shem of Hirsch. They consider them to support their false pretensions and their assertion that they could, by means of an arbitrary combination of letters, form a shem. So they try to work out combinations of letters to make a shem in order to, hopefully, that they really would have accidentally coincided with their formulation, with their combination coincided to the real shem of Farish. And then who knows what they could do. Which would act and operate miraculously when written or spoken in a certain particular way. Such fictions, originally invented by foolish men, were in the course of time committed to writing and came into the hands of good but weak-minded and ignorant persons who are unable to discriminate between truth and falsehood and made a secret of these shemot, because they found them. You know, they found the shemot from the original, the first ones he calls bad and foolish. The second ones he calls weak and good and weak-minded. Yeah. Because the first ones really try to do it for power, you see. So there had to be a certain element of foolishness there, because it wasn't, there has to be some element of imagination. A guy can't just make up a crazy thing.
The guy's intent was bad.
But his intent was bad, right.
The
he wanted power.
Wasn't bad.
The second guy was just good. He just thought this is something holy. He found it from generations before. He says, when after the death of such persons, those writings were discovered among their papers, it was believed that they contained truths. So he quotes Mishlei, for the simple believeth every word. We have already gone too far. Oh, okay. See? Not right over here. But he mentions that when you find something, people are very impressed with something old, and especially something in writing that's old. He says that has a very profound influence on a person's person's belief.
After these people die, like they could have
after they die, all the time.
To elevate the person to some kind
of respect, because in writing, find a book, say, you know, something written in a book, textbook, ooh, something tremendous. Written in a book has to have some value. Yeah? If it's old, a very old thing, then has more credibility. See? So this is a psychological factor. That's a psychological factor. That's why these, a lot of these things, these beliefs came into existence. And the same thing over here. Same thing over here. Somewhere or other, the Dead Sea Scrolls, find an old pair of tefillin. They'll find an old pair of tefillin, and they'll say, that's the authentic tefillin. And they know, maybe the guy put in his parshas backwards, but no, it's an old pair of tefillin. So years ago, they didn't go, years ago, a lot of people made their own tefillin also. So that's why the Rav one time mentioned also, you can never resolve the Machlekes Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi if you find an old pair of tefillin, you know, because I think they did find an old pair. Did they? They found like Rabbeinu Tam, yeah. Very old pair like Rabbeinu Tam. There's no way to resolve the Machlekes. Why? Because who is the pair? Who's it from? Who's the pair from? No pair of tefillin. What does it mean? Who's it from? What's it from?
Rabbeinu Tam. It's
part of Rabbeinu Tam. I mean, it has What if it predated
Yahweh Shon? What's the name? Who's Israel? This is one of the Bali and Messiah. That's one thing. If you find it with a stamp of one of the Bali and Messiah, you find it from Ezra Bezdinoi, then you can resolve the problem. They find no piftun, some jerk, didn't they? Put in this film the wrong way, so you can hear what passed on. It's crazy. That's not a... See, but to them, you found an old... This is it, the old piftun.
This is what you were claiming
about. It was written down by the Bali and Messiah, had written notes. They all had notes. But they weren't allowed to use them publicly. See? The reason was... They didn't want anyone to have it. See, they didn't want anybody to have it, because this way everybody will claim their authorities in Tarsh Bakhtar. This way the only ones that had it were the Bali and Masara, nobody else. And that's why the only way that those people who weren't Bali and Masara could argue with the Bali and Masara was one way. The only way they could do it was what?
Learning.
No. The ones that argue with the Bali and Masara, how do they argue? The only one way they argued. How do they argue? The Tzedukim by Susan, the Tzedukim. What's the other thing about the Tzedukim? They deny Tarsh Bakhtar. You see? Why do they deny Tarsh Bakhtar? Because they couldn't claim authority in Tarsh Bakhtar because they didn't have it. You understand what I mean? See, it was impossible. It was an impossibility. So anybody that wanted to argue had to deny Tarsh Bakhtar because they couldn't get it. The only ones that had it were the Bali and Masara, and Bali and Masara would never let a person in there unless they examined him. You know, sort of. He's not an emotional individual. His days are good. Person's rational. But if they saw somebody that didn't make it, they'd sort of flip matter based marriage. That was the end of it. They wouldn't have it.
You know, is
there
anything like in Kazan or something,
where
Gemara
that they
do this?
Yeah, it's an Isser. Look around, I'll teach Shayna Hogan, many Gemara's
now. Tell that what?
Shayna Hogan. Tell that's no good. Hogan means correct, doesn't live properly.
Midos wise,
different things, different factors, but especially, right. So if a Talmud, they saw a Talmud was no good, they wouldn't teach him. Dangerous person. So the system was a closed system. So no one could claim to be, it would be like, today medical profession is somewhat that way, but not like that, not to that degree, because it depends upon, you need a certain, you can't, not everybody can claim, a guy can't become a doctor, everybody can't become a doctor, which is good, it's a good thing. So but the books are available. See, over there, there was no svarim available. So no one could become a Lamdan unless he was really accepted into
by Chazal. They tell the facts for them.
What?
They tell the facts for them.
Yeah, they give shiur to Ramon. They give shiur to Ramon. They tell the facts for them. They give shiur to Ramon too. But a shiur to Ramon is not doesn't make up an authority. He heard a shiur, so it's not an authority. It doesn't have the system. The system was only those who really were great mentally, and also their emotions were normal or in place, but they wouldn't take anybody that was questionable. But now, why do we have the problems with JTS? I mean, JTS could claim authority also, and they do. Why? Because they have a Torah Shabbat Pes written down. We have the Talmud, and they have the Talmud. We interpret the Talmud, and they interpret the Talmud. They do more. They probably do more diggings than we do. So the interpretation is probably system. Because if you deny it, then people say, oh, you don't have it. See. But the moment you have just what they have, so then go explain to an average person who's going to know machlokes between what the Rav says or what the Rav Moshe says and what the JTS scholar says. Then it's the same thing, the same pedestal. See, that's why Tesh Rav was never supposed to be written down. That's a shot. Eis lasis lo l'shem eferu teresecha. So Chazal said they had to write it down. Why did they write it down? Because they saw it's getting lost. So it's getting lost. So it's read Eis lasis l'shem. What? Because they saw that they were forgetting. They're starting to, lose it. Yeah, it was the one, if you have like one individual has it and the other people don't have it, there were times when the people were under oppression, you know, one guy can get wiped out, the whole thing would be lost. You can't, they couldn't allow it to one individual, two individuals, the way it was going all along. They had to make sure it's a safeguard. Yeah. A safeguard had to make it more available. In order to safeguard.
How did they rescind the Tachanah?
Yeah, Feret Teresecha, because really it's a Feret Teresecha because it's causing the danger from the outside to attack us. But simultaneously, you have no choice. Why? Because otherwise you're going to lose it altogether. So it means it's the lesser of two evils. You have no choice.
So who are the ones who did it? Yeah,
and the ones that did it was done step by step. Rav Yehuda Nasi did it to the Mishnayos. That was the first thing.
the first big work that the Messiah is like more general.
He said there were very few people that had the mission accurately. It was getting down to like a handful of them. So they had to make it more available, not to make it more... What year do you mean?
Around the Common Era, right?
Around the Common Era. To the Talmud. And afterwards they did it to the Siddur. It was later. As you need, step by step.
I was wondering...
Yeah, only what was necessary. Because it wasn't... It was a matir, really. It wasn't... You can't remove the takana, just abrogate the takana. What they had to do was matir. The matir is the tzerech. Whenever there's a tzerech, so then you have some matir.
Yeah.
See? Chaim did it to Brisk in 50 years ago.
Is this the same thing as doing an avail?
When the Rambam gets finished with his metaphysics and his physics, it's very bekitzer, right? Because there's not much here. There's very bekitzer right there. It's the basic, certain things which have a basic importance, fundamental importance. So when he gets finished with that, he says like this. Yeah. Prakam Elu Shebachomesh Mitzvah Se'elu, and these four Prakam which are mentioned before, which are basically the are based upon five mitzvahs. Heim Shechom Arushenim Koros Pardes Kimei Shomer Abba Nechnesula Pardes. That's Pardes. Pardes means the knowledge of physics and metaphysics, but like what I told you last time, physics and metaphysics differentiated from the physics of today's physics, because today's physics is a different the purpose of the knowledge is a different one. You understand? Today's physics, the purpose of the knowledge is in order to be able to control the universe, not for knowledge per se. Our purpose in the physics is for knowledge of God, without which there is no real knowledge of physics. See? It's a different thing altogether. So the Rambam's physics is different than today's physics. Different physics altogether. Okay. You want to understand the concept of it. The concept, like we went through last week, the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu's knowledge and between the physicist's knowledge. It's different physics. But anyways, Rambam's like this. That this physics, this knowledge over here, physics and metaphysics, is called Pardes. He says like this. Vafa pisha gedeli Yisrael hayu. Even though these four were Gedolei Yisrael, tremendous, tremendous minds, geniuses, great geniuses, lachachom gedolim hayu, loy kulam hayu ben kayach leida ulahasig kol advarim aburyan. They didn't all have the ability to know, to comprehend everything, and to know it exactly, to know it properly. Okay. Now that I'm going to say like this, because even these four, the Gemara says, weren't all successful. Vani Omer, the Rambam says, and I say, Shein roi l'tayel b'pardes, elamish nismali kreise lechem ubasa. Rambam says, why do they call it a pardes? Pardes means the garden. He says, why do they call it a garden? Because a person doesn't usually take a walk in the garden until after he has supper. First he has to have a good meal. You don't walk around the garden when you're starving. I mean, it's not... there are priorities. Priorities in the world of enjoyment. You don't walk around and try to sniff a rose when you're starving. I mean, that's something you do. It's an enjoyment that follows after you have your basic needs. Pardes. So we know what pardes is. It says, now what do we have to find out what it is? What is? Now we have to find out what lechem ubasar is. Because you have to have lechem ubasar before you go into the pardes. So what is the lechem ubasar? So it says, the lechem ubasar who lay da ha'osar v'amutar. Says, the lechem ubasar is to know that which is osar and that which is mutter, the kayetze b'hem mishor ha-mitzvahs, which means Talmud Torah. What are we learning? What are we learning Yeshua? Gemara. That's what it means. So now it's us and what's mutter. Now I say like this, va'afal pi she'devarim elu davar katan koros and chachamim, even though the chachamim call it a small thing, shari amru chachamim, because the chachamim said davar gadol ma'isem merkava. The great thing is Ma'aseh Merkava means knowledge of God. The Dover Kotten of Ayis Dabai of Rova. And a small thing is the problems of Abai and Rova. Problems of Abai and Rova means the theoretical problems in the Gemara. That's a small thing. He says, so a person might think that why should I bother with a small thing? right?
Right.
Better off taking the big thing. Taking the big thing. Go right there. Ah. He says, Afal Pikain, even so. By the way, I mentioned this a few times, but I think it's not everybody remember. Why do we say Dover Kotten is a Vias of Bayav Rav? The Gemara is discussing who? Who's the Gemara discussing? Who's the Gemara discussing by a Vias Bayav Rav? The Gemara was discussing Talmidim of. The Gemara was discussing Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, right? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Avilah. So the Gemara was discussing Tanoim. So why did they mention Havayas Abayev Rava? It was before the time of Abayev Rava.
In all possibilities.
The answer is because Havayas Abayev Rava, which means the Machlekes and that we find in the Gemara, are all possibilities. But these possibilities weren't spoken about openly, weren't broken down openly. We have from Bayev Rava when they analyzed. But of course the Balei Mishnah knew the possibilities. They knew about the possibilities. Mm-hmm. Same thing as Rishonim. The Rishonim showed the further possibilities in Bayev Rava. Bayev Rava didn't mention those possibilities because to them it was obvious. But later the Rishonim had to discuss it. So really, it goes straight through that way. That's the way it goes, straight through. Every time you have Machlekes Rishonim, it means two logical possibilities. Mm-hmm. Now, Namara wouldn't mention that possibility because to him he knew clearly which way it was. He didn't have any suffix which term was Rabbeinu Tam's or Rashi. He didn't have any to talk about it. You see? But the two possibilities in Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi's Tefillin is two conceptual ideas in Tefillin. Two different ideas. Okay. Now, say so like this. Afal Pikain, even though this it's a small thing, Ru'uyin Hain like Dimon. These must come first. These must come first. Why must they come first? He says, Shehein miyashvin daitei shel odam tchila. Hein miyashvin daitei shel odam tchila. What does it mean? Yeah, they settle as das first. That's one reason. Va'oid, Shehein ha'teva ha'gedola she'eshpia ha'kodesh baruch hu li'yishuv ha'olam hazeh kidei linchol chaye ha'olam haba. Ve'efshu she'yedoim ha'koel koton ve'godol ish ve'isha ba'alev rochev u'ba'alev koter. What is he saying? Two reasons he gives. Let's take the first reason. The first reason is Shehein miyashvin daitei shalodam tchila. What does it mean? There is no subject in the world which trains a person to think and to understand logically. I mean logically, I mean according to the true method of logic. I mean, I don't mean logically that the other people refer to. I mean the true approach to knowledge, which is the approach which is Das Hashem, when you're studying Gemara. So really you have an insight into Chochmas Elokim, into the knowledge, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu's knowledge is, to some extent. Of course, there's an Ein Adama. Whenever I say that, I mean, an Ein Adama, the knowledge of God is qualitatively differentiated. I mean, an insight into, as far as we can obtain, an insight into the Das Hashem. So where is the area where you really can, where a person can develop his mind properly according to the true way of thinking? The true way of thinking is where? It's in Gemara. So the Rambam says, before a person approaches these big problems, he has to have knowledge of how to think properly. See? That's one reason. Yes?
Especially, I mean, you could see
that. The reason why the Atzilei B'nai Yisrael had the wrong vision of God was because they were big Balei Taiva.
The lazy ones.
The princes. There is a greater emotional problem. But the point is this, that in learning, somehow or other, I mean, if you really, a person has honestly studied different subjects, I think they come to the conclusion, I mean, I know that I have from the time that I spent in other areas also. There is no subject in the world which is as condensed, which lends itself to a development of foreign ideas like Gemara. You could read, for instance, take some of the greatest thinkers in the world. Take a person like Plato, tremendous, tremendous thinker, tremendous mind, right? There are more ideas in the first parak in Kedusha than there are in both volumes of Plato. See? There, if you take an area of the psychology, take the greatest minds in psychology, you will find in a few blot of Gemara there's more concepts and more development of ideas than in a few blot than in all the works. You see? The truth of the matter is that some of those ideas which deal, like for instance, in physics and other areas, you might have one tremendous idea. See, one fantastic idea which is really of great importance. which is true. But the point is, there is no way the building blocks aren't there. You know what I mean? There's no way to develop in Svara. Developing in Svara is in Gemara. Gemara is the subject which really gives a person development. Svara. Every line, you have one concept, machlekes, up and back, to be able to formulate your ideas in Gemara is really where a person gets a workout and how to think properly. There's no other subject like that. Mathematics is deductive. Deduction. A person can know all the works of Euclid, all 13 books. And it will be a tremendous deduction. I'll know exactly if this mind might develop in the area of deduction. But induction doesn't even exist there. You can't define. There's no definitions there. You see? It's true it has definitions in the beginning, but the definitions in the beginning are really, you know, it's like more or less like postulates. And even if you go into those areas of definitions, there isn't the same. It's not the same thing. Gemara is a combination, a perfect combination of both, as deduction and induction, both together. And also, there's another thing in Gemara. In Gemara, there's another art, you see, which doesn't exist in other subjects, and that's what makes it very difficult. For instance, a person studying medicine doesn't have to learn how to read a medical book. I mean, he reads it. That's it. There's nothing to it. He reads it and he starts studying it. But in Gemara, a person can't just read through a Gemara. See? You can't just sit down and read through a Gemara. Even in the very reading, a person has to learn how to isolate phenomena. See, that's a tremendous thing, to learn how to isolate. Which are the important phenomena? What am I supposed to be looking for? And that itself is a tremendous art. Yeah, method, to know how to isolate phenomena, to be able to look at a group of phenomena and know how to formulate them. What are the phenomena I'm going to deal with, first of all? What are the main phenomena here? Line up your phenomena, and then to be able to have a cheshbon, deduction of the phenomena, and then the inductive theory. You see? This is Gemara. Asad Ram means ru'uyinin like diman. This is the area, the Rambam says, that will train a person to the best, give them the best possible training. And it is true, you will find the Rambam held very highly from certain philosophers and never had a training. They're not that many people, but he held, I'd say, a handful of philosophers that the Rambam held from that really were tremendous. He held they were great in philosophy in Dover Gadol, yet they didn't have Dover Gadol. So the answer is, it is possible for a human being to do it. You understand? It's possible. But the chances that he'll be able to succeed are on such a method are very, very slim. Very, very slim. Chances are very slim, because you see that only a handful of people in the world ever made it. You follow? Avraham Avinu made it. And you have other philosophers Shiram mentions that were tremendous, very big. They were able to see certain ideas of Yahadis on their own without the Torah. But there's only very, very few people like that. So the truth of the matter is, those people, if they would have had the Derech of Torah, then they would have been advanced much more. So they would have advanced much more, because they would have had the greater insight. Years could go by, a guy could waste his time, years and years, until he sees the proper way to approach a problem. So if he doesn't have it, he's losing out. That's what Ram means, ruin him like demon. These must come first. This is the area, the person must master this area. Not only must they come first, but in Yahadis we have never accepted a philosopher unless he knows Shas. Unless he knows Shas, unless he's thoroughly versed in Shas. If a person can't learn a Taisvis, a person can't work out a Rishon, can't learn through a Sugya, I mean, it's obvious that his mind is not ready for higher areas. But today's philosophers don't want to do that. They don't want to have anything which qualifies them. They just want to talk about philosophy. That's very nice. But my friends, where are your credentials? Can you work out a Sugya? You can't. You mean your mind is too weak to work out a Machlekes Rishonim and work out a Sugya, Machlekes Amoraim? And yet you think that you can work out philosophy? That's an absurdity. A person doesn't have the ability to work through a Sugya properly, then he certainly doesn't. We can't accept anything he says in philosophy. Doesn't have the ability. It's not a free-for-all. Yeah. Ram says, "Marlo, a tremendous harm can come to the guy from that. Wrong ideas.
That doesn't mean he can't have any ideas in Delaware Gunner.
Wrong ideas.
Let me specify.
Insofar as a person is benefited by knowledge, that's how much you will be harmed by having false ideas.
That means going into
Tom better than Longreader. No question about it. Longreader is about a cross of water. Longreader is about life. Longreader is about everything. Guy's completely going. The guy will go directly in the wrong way.
Whole life
is wrong.
You are talking about listening to
a fact idea. You're looking at Rambam. Rambam will tell you a lot of philosophical conclusions. The book from the Achazak in the beginning. You understand? You can't be harmed by that because it's telling you the true thing. You might not understand it. That's all. But you can't be harmed by that.
Misunderstand.
Now, the Rambam says, that the, well, the Yachas, okay, so you can't. But even the modern Rambam, the Rambam writes in his Akdamah, he says he wrote it in a way that a person will not be harmed.
I don't think he realized today.
Because a person who does not know, he says, won't understand what he's talking about. The person that does know, we'll know, we'll get the true idea. Linchol means to inherit. Linchol means to inherit. So that's the first thing. First reason is prerequisite. Mental prerequisite. It's necessary. He cannot go to a difficult subject till his mind is developed in the way of thinking of the Torah, which is the way of thinking of God. And if he doesn't have that way of thinking, that approach, then he can't approach. That's why you see, for instance, in these areas like psychology, education, all the areas which are not strictly laboratory, subject to laboratory experiments. You see how many different ways there are in the world. Psychology, right? That's the only one truth in psychology, right? But there's at least 40 or 50 different approaches. Even major approaches that are brought down in the textbooks, you have 10, 15 in the right. Correct? And under those, splintered up into different each, and each one himself is on each, it comes out almost a psychologist, don't you, direct? So, you see, what does that show? That shows what the Rambam says. The Rambam says, whenever you have a lot of machlekes, and it shows you one thing. And nobody knows what I'm talking about. That's right. Any area which is not subject to experimentation, you have tremendous amount of views. Why? Because nobody can prove his point. These guys is one guy, this guy, one guy, that way. Same thing you have with an education also. Have the old theories and new theories, and it keeps on going. Each guy has another theory, it keeps on going. Why? The reason for all this is one thing. Because none of them have learned to think in the proper way. When people think in the proper manner, so then they go along a certain path. There's a certain trodden path. But when you don't know how to think, or why a person should think this way and not the other way, and you haven't developed yourself, so then it's a free-for-all. One guy can say one thing, the other guy can say one thing that's completely the opposite. Well, the other guy says, how could two chacham say two things exactly the opposite? The answer is because there's no method, there's no approach. There is no formula, no theoretical approach. As a matter of fact, even in the world of physics, there is, strictly speaking, no real theoretical approach. The proof of the matter is, by the turn of the century, when Einstein came out with his theory, so if you ever took a look, I had a chance one time to look at the old newspapers at the time. So they said, is Einstein crazy? And his picture, you know, and the physicists were arguing he's nuts, it's crazy, and they said it's Jewish mathematics, it's Jewish physics, it's away from experimentation, it's totally theoretical. And it took them years until they started to see. But the reason why they saw it was not because of course they accepted him theoretically, in a theoretical plane. The reason was because the experiments kept on hammering away at them. Everything he says, bingo, it happens over here, it happens over there, it happens over there, keeps on, it can't deny it after a while. But that shows you that there was no real unified approach to the science in terms of methodology. It was just the experimentation caused them to accept the fact that it must be, that this theory must be the theory. You understand what I'm saying? But in terms of theoretical, abstract theoretical formulation, there was no approach. You understand
what I'm saying? Did you use the against them? They said Jewish theory, Jewish thinkers?
Some did, some didn't. Yeah. But over there, see, in an area where you have laboratory experiments, it's easy to disprove. But in any other area of life, And unfortunately, some of the most important areas of life are not subject to laboratory experiments. Philosophy, ethics, what a person should do with his life, how a person should live, psychology, education. I mean, these things are extremely important to an individual, to a human being. And yet it's not so easily subject to laboratory experiments. Hard to isolate which factors are the important factors. My wife is reading me, she's taking some courses in education, she's reading to me a whole list of differences between a creative individual and a non-creative individual. So they list down 50 differences. Some of them repeated in 14 different ways. But the point is, how do you know this difference is the thing which is related to, is causally related? And if so, I mean, how is it related? I mean, and you'll find people that have one or two of the factors that aren't creative at all. So is it all the factors, part of the factors, which of the factors are essential? There's no approach. You don't know. So you just take an experiment. Your experimentation is very weak because you can't isolate factors like you can when you're dealing with nuclear fission. You're dealing with certain things that are subject to simple, concrete experimentation, gravity, whatever it is. But here you can't. And these are very important areas. So since you can't, each guy, each kol yasher bein av yaseh, each guy does his own thing, his own way. See? That's the purpose of the Torah. The purpose of the Torah is to show that there is, to give one, at least to give the uniform conclusions in education. That's what, that was Maimon Har Sinai. To give the uniform conclusions in areas, philosophy, education, not medicine. Medicine was given over to man. Man advances in medicine. That wasn't given on Har Sinai. But on Har Sinai was given those things without which a person can't live, the essence of his life. I mean, even if a person should die at an early age, but at least he lived to that point. And even if you have less people, at least those who are living are living. That had to be given at Sinai. But other things, medical science, will just keep his body alive. But without any knowledge of how to live, what's the purpose of his whole existence, fellow? So therefore, that's the first reason. First reason is to show that a person who has knowledge, he knows the approach of Torah. And once he knows what the theoretical approach is, then he knows how to approach every area that way. So by doing that, he knocks out 45, 50 different ways he could have wasted his life in. You understand what I mean? Okay. That's the first reason. Now the second reason. What's the second reason? Second reason is, listen to what he says. So he is. Va'oid shehem ha-teva ha-gedoyla she'eshpia ha-kadosh baruch hu li'yishuv ha-olam hazeh kedei linchol chaye ha-olam haba. This is the good that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to conquer this world, to establish. Sheshpia means he influenced.
Right.
But it's not, you can't translate it exactly right. Influence. It means,
it's
a different word. I'm trying to think of the word. Hold on a second. The word would be... Kosh Baruch Hu gave over, but more than just giving over, he gave over with the emanator from Kosh Baruch Hu. Kosh Baruch Hu caused to emanate. Even that's weak. I don't know. I can't really translate. Okay, the Yishuv Olam Hazeh, in order to live properly in this world, Kedei Linchol Chai Olam Haba, in order that the person should be zecha, the people should be zecha to Olam Haba. Yeah, and yet we know that it will be an impossibility for a person. Let's say a person knows he's going to live for an eternity, right? So wouldn't the person want to do everything for that eternity and forget about the few years that he's here, right? Now you know for a fact that the man, if you live right, you're going to have an eternity, right? So how can you tell yourself, I'm not going to do it for that eternity? That's crazy. What are you fooling yourself? You know what I mean? The guy knows he's going to do this, he's going to get $1 million, right? And $1 million is worth more than what it is. So he's going to say, do it for this, not for that. What do you mean? It's impossible. That's the important thing, right? The same thing over here. A guy knows that if he lives his life of Torah, he's going to live for an eternity. So in other words, and insofar as he gains in Torah, that's how much more his eternity will be, right? Now once he knows that, how could he forget about the eternity and say he's doing it not for that purpose? He'd be a nut. I mean, he has to do for what the best good is, right? Rami answered the question. But for that, you have to come to Bobby's class.
You just have to die.
Just for all my bar. Alright? Let's see what the... what is all my bar going to Rami? What is all my bar? What is Olam Haba? I feel like it's Ramban and Ram by all my boys. What is Olam Haba going to Ram? After death. That's Olam Haba. Okay. Right. Non-physical state. That's the Ram. So what is the... So he says that this is a means to Olam Haba. Why is this a means to Olam Haba? Why? How is this a means to Olam Haba? What's the answer?
I can tell you something. I'm a
physical
part.
Now
I say that
because
he has to have emotional perfection.
Because gives a person an olam haba. What gives a person an olam haba? What would you say? What gives an olam haba? Rav Maisov the Rav Chachmasa Yuzecha. Two things: Maisim and Chachma. What's the combination of Maisim and Chachma? What's the combination of Meisim and Chochmah? Two things. Meisim means his good deeds, right? And Chochmah and Chochmah is knowledge. Oh, what is the combination of those two factors? Why does a person get Olam HaBa according to those combination of those two factors? What is the combination? Yes?
Because the idea is that let's say a person has Chochmah in a certain area, yeah, right? But he can't carry out the Meisim, you know, he can't direct his actions according to the knowledge he knows. So then that shows that the emotion has still is still in the intellect. The emotion is still guarding his behavior. Yad is maintained as far as the person's ability to perfect himself.
Who has Ma'aseh and Reish Chochmah? It has to be a common denominator. What's the common denominator between those two things? Most people think of it as two separate things. It's not two different things. Not so. Not two different things. As a matter of fact, it's something which other religions couldn't understand, because you see other religions say, who cares about Chochmah? As long as he does good, as long as he's a good person. An honest, the honest fisherman. He's a great person. The Yadis is another way. You're thinking the guy is Maisav, no matter. No. Yadis maintains it's both. It's both. Maisav and Chochmasai. One is tied in with the other. How do they tie in together? There has to be one common bond on which they both meet. One point on which they both meet. One common point. What's the common point? That's the question. Oh, the combination, multiplication, two factors, give it to us. There are cases of guys who acknowledge in Gemara. Let's take a case. Guys who acknowledge in Gemara, the guy's not Bikaris. Smoke cigarettes or shatters. I know the case of a guy who was in Lakewood. This is my son in Lakewood. The guy was a very intellectual guy. He used to like to listen to our Baron Cutler's Shurim. But he didn't have time to write, so he'd write him over on Shabbos. Good time. But he spoke to him. Very good head, the guy. He spoke to him, he brought him back. Dude came to chew and everything. But at the time, you know, I mean, so what happened to a guy like that? Guys, let's think of an example. A guy knows how to learn, he's a murderer. Let's kill him. Not possible. Why isn't it possible? What's the story? Yeah, that we know. We find out that when you start analyzing them, when you raise it all your life, you have to be good. Why do you have to be good? You have to be good. That's it. So now, why? What does it do? What has to be that way? There's a marshal of a certain Tana that he was saying Krishna, and saying he wanted to sell something. He was saying Krishna, and the guy came along, and the guy said that...
Shemeshetach,
that's right. The guy said to him, he says, how much do you want for it? I'll give you $2. And he kept on saying Krishna. So the guy said, okay, make it 4. Kept on saying, I'll make it 8. Kept on going. Then after he got finished, he said, I was going to sell it to you for 2, so we'll take it for 2. The Gemara says, that's Yer Shemayim. Doesn't say Yer Shemayim is how many times he shook in Krishna. He shook his head 1,000 times, or how long he was Machavan in Krishna. Doesn't say that. It says the Yer Shemayim was his honesty and dinamominus. That's where the taivas are. What? Yeah, they didn't stop in the middle. Doesn't say that. It says the godless was... Because in Dina Monas, it could have made 500% profit, but it wasn't honest. It made 100% profit. That's it. 50% profit, whatever it was. See? So that's apparently in Dina Monas, that's where the Taiva really expressed itself. That's why the Novi always talks about. Always talks about this. Sorry. In the beginning of Shayo, Ashayafim al Afar Eretz Bereish Dalek. They look at the little bit of dust on the head of a poor man, they'll take it away because they're Taichemdas Amamai, Taivis. And that's the most powerful thing. Nobody doesn't talk about this when you put on Tzvom. That the guy, it's a person of the Taiva to grab. It's the emotion to grab. You understand what I mean? See, the thing is like this, he really was satisfied with this much. That's all he needed for his needs, right? Ah, but then the taiva comes and you get more grip. See? That's the emotion. Why is it Yer Shemayim? Why is it called Yer Shemayim? I'll tell you why the Gemara calls it Yer Shemayim. Because the Gemara always calls Yer Shemayim something which no one else knows except you. See, that's Yer Shemayim. That's why the Gemara gives that example. As for Yeresim Alekecha. It means, is the guy in line with reality per se? Is he really in line with reality himself? Or is it dependent upon what other people think? So most people live according to the way other people think. That becomes their reality. That's not Yer Shemayim, that's Yer Sodom. Yer Shemayim, yes, sorry. Yer Shemayim means when there is no other fact that you're just looking at your soul and the reality and how the best way for you to live your life according to the best thing for your soul. You see? Now, you could have gotten away with more time and nobody would even know. See? But the point is, when you know, that's Yerush Shamayim. That's really Yerush Shamayim. So shuckling and tefillah is not considered. The Gemara wouldn't give an example of Yerush Shamayim guy because shuckling and tefillah for a lot of reasons. Shuckling and tefillah because he likes to show off where he is. Yeah.
Apparently he didn't chuckle.
Apparently he didn't, because the guy is saying it very quietly. He didn't even know what he was doing. Means quietly. No one knows. No one has to know. Hasnei alechas malakecha means that he just, it's like esolakimis alachneach, just by himself. That's all. No care about society. No care about society. That's the true. That's true Yerushalayim. That's real Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is really internal. And the greatness of tzaddikim, the real tzaddikim, it's hard to know what they were, because what they really were is all internalized. And all the maislach that they tell about the outside, it's true, you can't see sometimes, you know, you get a glimpse from it. But what's inside the person, you'll never know. His real Yerushalayim, you'll never know. Because real Yerushalayim is internalized. That's the real Yerushalayim. So, okay, now getting back to that's why the other things is all these externals. All these externals are not really, the world today goes for externals. You know, externals, beer, the kapata, this, the that. All these externals are not really Yerush Shamayim. It's just societal things. As a matter of fact, it's something which lends itself to a tremendous degree to gaiven to other bad news. Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
A double A, which is a very great person, really saw through so many of the shams. And as a natural consequence, he suffered most of his life. No
natural consequence.
Choose two factors. What's the combination? What happened to Acher? Questionable thing. Acher was tremendous Talmud Chacham. Acher came to the next world, the Gemara says. What happens to Acher? What happens to a person like Acher? So the Gemara gives a whole story over there. What happens? Yeah, the Gemara says that we can't put him in and give him the Mabah because he was not precarious. Yeah, we can't give him an Einish because Asik Baraisa. Oh, Gemara over there. What happened? But you see, Meisim play a big role. Meisim, Acher was tremendous Chacham. Nobody was bigger than Acher. I don't mean in his time, but I mean to say nobody today can be considered anywhere near Acher. It's ridiculous. And you're going to say that the people today get Olam Haba. It's a close relation to Olam Haba. So apparently Meisim have to do with it. Eventually he had Olam Haba, but the whole Gemara over there. But I want to point out, you see, Meisim are important. Why? It's terror just to knock down somebody, you see. It is better that he never would have been born. So apparently it's not a good thing. Right? It's not a good thing. I, the guy, he knows terror. Lime of the Kanta, I can know a lot of terror of the Kanta, right? It's a good motivation. Yes? I want you to know, Oil of my Ba is not a separate thing. That's what you're going to bother with. Oil of my Ba is not a separate thing that a person gets as a matara. See? Oil of my Ba is a natural result that the soul experiences if it lives the most correct life possible for a human being.
In other words, on this condition, you will get...
Let's say, for instance, you have in the Olympics, right? Yeah. So you have two things. You have a person who is the... Well, we'll take the... what do you call it? The decathloners, right? They're supposed to be decathloners. They're supposed to be the all-around greatest athletes, right? What's the matter? You don't know Olympics?
You know
that. So, a person who wins the decathlon event, the person who's decathlon event gets a gold medal, right? That gold medal has nothing to do with the natural, with his physical perfection. That's perfection, physical perfection, right? Correct? But that's something, giving something to him instead, in place of his physical perfection. It was for his physical perfection, but it has nothing to do with, not a natural result. The fact that he is capable of performing certain athletic feats due to the perfection of his body after he wins the event is a natural result of the state of his body. You see? But the gold medal is not a natural result. Now, therefore, there are two types of rewards. One reward is a natural thing. Let's say, for instance, this person who was a decathloner was in a dangerous situation. A normal person would not have made it, but he made it because of his perfection of his body, right? That wouldn't be something which was given to him because of... It's a natural result. You know, it wasn't an extraneous thing that was given to him. It's a natural result. The fact that he was in such good shape, so therefore he was able to run and do whatever it was, and he was able to save his life. Natural result. But something which is given to him as a prize, this is something which is given to him not as a natural result, it's an extraneous thing. Fellow, that's why many of them just do it for the reward. And once they get the reward, then they don't care anymore. Because everything was done for that purpose. So in Olam Haba is not that way. Olam Haba is you don't do things in order to get that reward. You see? Olam Haba is a natural result. A person who lives the life, the correct life of a human being, it is natural that his soul will exist. His soul will not be destroyed. That's a natural thing. You follow? It's not that it's given to him as a reward. It's a natural result of living as a human being. Because the Nefesh HaAdam in its pure state is not destroyed. Now, if he has a pure Nefesh HaAdam, that's the way it's going to be. If he doesn't, then it won't. That's one clue. One clue. So the question that we have to ask is, since that is so, Olam Haba is a natural result of the way a person lives. The way a person lives in Olam Hazeh, right? So we must know that the best life in Olam Hazeh will naturally result in Olam Haba. Correct? Okay. Now, to find out one thing. What is that? What is the best life in Olam Hazeh? And once you know that, but what I've helped you out with is like this. That the best life in Olam Hazeh is...
one which leads to Olam Haba.
That's a natural result. But the best life in Olam Hazeh is one which is based upon two things. What is it? On Maisim and Chachma. See? Now, once you understand why this is so, I've moved the question now. I've moved it. I haven't given you the answer. But I've moved the question into a certain perspective. You understand what I mean? In other words, Olam Haba is not a reward. Olam Haba is something which naturally flows from the best life of Olam Hazeh. Now we have to understand what is that life that is the best life in Olam Hazeh, which is caused by a combination of two factors interacting, which is what? Which is Chachma and which is Maisa. Can a person just tell me what is that quality? How would you mean? A lot of possible answers. Going long-winded answers. I want one thing. Just tell me what is the life. A person will ask you what is the life. Summarize, please. What is the best life? What is the life of? Can a person just tell me what is that quality? How would you mean? A lot of possible answers. Going long-winded answers. I want one thing. Just tell me what is the life. A person will ask you what is the life. Summarize, please. What is the best life? What is the life of Torah? What is the best life? Just tell me what it is. What is it? What is the best life? Has to be the same best life has to be for everybody. You can't tell me that it's the best life for Chacham, there's the best life for this guy. What is the best life? Yes? It's very simple. A person's like the Rambam describes in Avos Hashem. A person whose whole life is one thing. What's his whole life? His whole life is simply tied to the knowledge of God. Right? Tied to Avos Hashem. His whole life is just an endless attachment. This is the only thing that's important. Everything else is nonsense. Everything else is only a means to that. Correct? A person who lives that life has the best life. There are no... He doesn't worry about... There's no worries in his life. There's nothing to worry about. He doesn't worry about his tithes. Doesn't worry about his neighbor next door. What happens to him if he got $50, $60, $100, $1,000, whatever. He doesn't worry about kinder. Doesn't worry about tinder. There's nothing that's important to him. The only thing that's important to him, he's constantly involved. He just loves this thing. And he's doing something which he constantly loves. And that's it. He has his life in mitchilosev ad seifa is the greatest possible life. There are no headaches, there are no worries, there's nothing bothers him. He just goes along straight on this one thing. All the other problems that people have, they have to work out. He wants this type of house, that type of house, this didn't work out, that didn't work out. He has to make sure this works, that. All these problems are non-existent to him. Because he only has one singular desire and one singular thing which he does and which he's constantly involved in and which he enjoys. And that's his whole life. Now, what type of a life is that? It's a life in which he simply loves Chachma, he's attached to Chachma, and that's it. You follow? It's all Chachma Sashem. That's his whole life. A person who has that life has no worries, no problems. That's his whole life. Okay? Now, in order to have that life, what must the person do? It's not so easy. It's easy to you could summarize it in one sentence. But to get there is very difficult. There are two factors which cause a person, which help a person in that area. One is if it's the life of Chachma, so appreciation of Chachma. And it's simply the appreciation of Chachma. The appreciation of Chachmas Hashem requires one thing, first of all. What does it require?
Yeah, it requires a certain knowledge. A person doesn't have knowledge. I mean, you can't say he appreciates chachma. He has no chachma. What does he appreciate? Correct? So one thing is chachma. Chachma increases. The more knowledge he has, the more he understands, the greater the enjoyment, so the greater the appreciation. Correct? The second thing, though, is what? Second thing is what? Is perfection of his emotions. Because his emotions are tied to different nonsensical things. He's caught up in different nonsensical things emotionally. He's caught up in running here, running there. He can't control his emotions. So then again, how could he appreciate chachma? And one, you understand? All his emotions are tied up in doing these in these other areas. So first of all, the person has to be able to remove himself from the other areas, from the other emotional attachments. Correct? Then he has to take the energy and he has to direct it to chachma. So he must have chachma there, and in the area of chachma, he must have chachma. If there's no chachma, what does he appreciate? You understand? So therefore, in order to have the life of appreciation of chachma, two things are necessary. One thing is necessary is what?
He has to have the
chachma itself. What does he appreciate? He has to have the object of his appreciation. Mm-hmm. And secondly, he has to remove himself from all the other attachments.
Greg will
never get to them. That's perfection of a person. Now, what does Meissen do? What does Meissen do? What do Meissen do?
They take them away from those emotions. They break those emotions.
See, breaking the emotions is a long process. It's not a short thing. It takes time. It takes years. The Rav one time mentioned, he said a person could go 50, have 50 Yom Kippurs and do one tshuva, the last Yom Kippur. He says that was worth it. I mean, it's not such an easy thing. It takes years of work. Years of effort. Correct? It is not that you go and break each mita, but you take the emotions completely away from the area completely. You know what I mean? It's not a breaking of the mita per se. Okay? But it's removal of the emotions and it goes to another area, so all the mitas flop away. Rami break down all the mitas in one shot. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. You understand? It's a different approach. We'll go through that one time.
Instead of working on the mita itself,
they're looking at it. It's not breaking the meat itself. It's the only reason you break a meat is so that you can remove the energy from there and go to somewhere else. Once put it somewhere else, everything else goes. The kin, it ties and all those things fall away. You know what I mean? The perfect man is rid of all those things, one shot. Not that he has to break kin, break sin, break tie, start working on each meat. You know what I mean? Only insofar as unless he's attached, unless he's sick, he's ill, he's attached to one of the things, then he has to break it. Either go to one or the other. Round it all to the sheet. Okay. So that's the point. You understand what I'm saying? So that's what the Rambam says. That ulefi gaidel maisa v'rev chachmasa yuzecha. Because what is a chaya olam haba? Chaya olam haba is a natural result of living the best life in olam hazeh, right? What is the best life for a human being in olam hazeh? It's attachment to the appreciation of chachma. How does a person attach himself to the appreciation of chachma? First of all, he has to have chachma, there's no question. And insofar as he has chachma, there's more appreciation. A greater chachma, Moshe Rabbeinu saw chachma, the attachment was unbelievable, because he saw, we get an enjoyment out of a svara, right? Can you imagine what kind of enjoyment he got? Out of seeing such unbelievable chachma. I mean, enjoyment was amazing, overwhelming. You see? Alright, so the more chachma you gain, the more knowledge you gain, the greater the enjoyment gets. You follow? That's why you see a person, even a person like a physicist, like Einstein. Einstein used to say, he writes that when he was involved in Chachma, seeing the universe, he said it was filled with a tremendous desire to meet God. He describes it almost like the Rambam does. Einstein says. Describes it almost like the Rambam says. Almost the same thing. It's interesting. His own words. I don't think I've ever said it wrong. So the thing is, why? Because when you start seeing the Chachma Hashem, you start feeling you want to get closer to the source of the Chachma. It's tremendous enjoyment. That's why a person like that didn't care about money. He used to write in the back of his checks. He used to give him send them all bikes, right? Use them for equations. He didn't care. When he first came to Princeton University, so they asked him. They said to him, "Well, how much of a salary do you want?" So he was thinking, you know, and he says. $3,000. Could I live on less? So that time, this is years ago. $3,000 years ago was like, I guess, like 10, 12. Right? So he says, they said to him, "Well, we'll give you $15. It's bizarre for them to say they're giving the guy $3,000. But he had no use for it. And any excess that he had, he used to give back to the university. You see? Because he didn't care. He wasn't involved. Tithe to him was nothing. Because he saw, why was it nothing? Because he saw what chachma was. When a person sees what chachma is, really starts seeing the broad scale of chachma is, so this becomes like nothing. You follow? But in order to get to that level, there's two things that are required. First of all, of course, insofar as his chachma is capable, the greater a chachma he is, the more he'll appreciate and see the beauty of chachma. That's one. But the other thing is, which is necessary in order to get yourself involved in chachma so that you can do the action of studying so you could increase your chachma, you have to break away from the bad meisim, right? And you have to do certain actions which are beneficial, certain good meisim which are beneficial for the soul. You follow? So that's why meisim are so important. That's what the Rambam says. He says the other reason is, the second reason why a person has to study the Davar Asur and Davar Mutter first, because the system of Torah, Tayag Mitzvahs, what's the system that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, which gives us the best life, that leads to the life of Chachma, the best formula? That's Tayag, that's the Torah. So he must know Asur V'Mutter, because by living through the going through Asur V'Mutter, living the life of Halacha, he improves his soul. Insofar as he brings himself up from a lower madriga to a higher madriga. A person who is a Shema Torah Mitzvah and who understands Asra Mut has a different kind of life. I mean, every time he does something, it's Chachma. He puts on tefillin. If he knows it was tefillin, it's Chachma. You understand what I mean? He makes a bracha. He has the concept of a bracha, it's Chachma. Every time he's davens his tefillah, he comes to his emotions, realize what the purpose of his life is. He makes a bracha. I often say, why do Chazal make, Chazal have a lot of brachas, right? A bracha on achilas, peres, and the brachas on mazon, right? Why? Because all these brachas make a person realize. He realizes not, this is what a person forgets. He thinks he's a wealthy individual. Most people today, when I say wealthy, I mean most people today. I don't mean extremely wealthy. I mean, the average person today is a wealthy individual compared to the way they lived years ago. I mean, a person has plenty of money. A person has to worry about eating the fruit. There's plenty of fruit. There's plenty of bread. There's plenty of food. I mean, what's the big idea of making a bracha on each and everything you eat? What's the purpose? The answer is because he comes to the realization of the fact that what? Well, it makes a bracha on the food. It makes a bracha on mazon. Comes to the realization that this is really the whole purpose of this. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me this food in order to sustain myself. For what purpose? The purpose of Talmud Torah. And he comes to the realization that that everything that he has is one lump thing. Everything is Yad Hashem. It's all Ashgacha. And this is the purpose. The Ashgacha gave me this. Why did he give me this? For the purpose that I should be able to eat this fruit, so I should gain strength, so I should be able to sit down. Every time he makes a bracha, every time he's misparo, every mitzvah that he does constantly reminds him, if he does it properly and he knows the halachis, first of all, it's everything he does off pi chachma. Make a bracha now, don't make a bracha now, eskelecha here is machlokes Rambam, Rabbi Natam, and the whole thing, his whole life is constant chachma, removes him completely from the physical. You understand? And the essence of the mitzvah itself tie into the Le'ulim Chol Chayolam Abba. That's what brings him to Chayolam Abba. You understand what I mean? This is the means of perfection. Then, once he has that means, once he's perfected, as his soul is perfected, you understand? Then he can involve himself in the true purpose of life, and then insofar as he's a chacham, he will be able to what? He will be able to uncover, insofar as he's capable, if he goes with the proper method, and he's insofar as he's capable of uncovering the chachma, he'll be able to appreciate the chachma Hashem. There's two things necessary to appreciate chachma. One thing that's necessary is that his energy should be directed to the area, and the second thing is how much in the area does he have itself. You understand what I mean? First he has to direct everything to the area. Then the quality of the area itself. Ma'aseiv is how much he directs. And the Rav Chachmasai is the quality of the Chachma. But you can have Chachma without appreciation also. You can have, we've seen it, that people have a tremendous amount of Chachma, they have no appreciation of Chachma. Is that the life of Torah? No, he's living the same life as any other Baiba. Why? He's involved in the same conflicts as Titus, from the same moment is what he wants. He wants the life of Kavod, he wants the life of all these, he's after all the bad things, right? So what good is his Chachma? His Chachma is worthless. That is not the good life, it's not the good life over here, and therefore it has nothing to do with Adam Abba. You understand? Adam Abba is a natural result of what? Of the best life over here. Excuse me? That is appreciation of Chachma. Appreciation of Chachma. So that natural state is not to be found necessarily by a guy who has more knowledge. Of course, you can have a guy that has a tremendous amount of knowledge, but he used the knowledge as a means. You had, I mean, Imach Shimon, today you have him also. You think there aren't Russian scientists that are intelligent? Of course they're intelligent. There are plenty of people are intelligent. But their intelligence is used as a means for what? For the taivas, as a means for power, as a means for taiva. That's worthless. That's not appreciation of him at all. So that the person's life like that has no problem at all. Because that's not the life, that's not the perfected life of an individual. That's why you have those two factors. And it depends on the person. Some people have more capability in the area of Chachma. So if he, insofar as he perfects himself, so he will go higher. It's true. But you will still find people who are have more ability in Chachma. Another person will have a better chelik than Rabba. Why? Because why would I have better chelik than Rabba? Because what? Because of Maisa. But of course, in Klal Yisrael, you always had to have. Who was always the leader in Klal Yisrael? Always the Chachma Yisrael. Why? Because they had both Chachman and Maisa. We never had a leader that was like you have philosophers in the Umasa Elam that lived like Mishagayim. Great people that lived like drunkards or crazy nuts. I mean, we don't have that. Why? Because if a person is, then he has no shekhas to the life. A person might have a very good head, but he has no shekhas to the life. Okay.
To the Mohammed's base, David, get creases curse of Lishtai. Then anybody that went out to, anybody that went to war, really get. So, right. So that, Oyachiti, I give him a get in advance.
Again on tonight.
Oh, it wasn't by the Meshish, because once Oyachiti died, so then it was the Mafrei, it was considered a, it was considered a get, yeah. But yeah, it was still Navera. It was still Navera. There's no question about it was Navera. Yeah, because he was married to Malchus anyways, Oyachiti. But the, so he was Chayef Misa, and so they put him out in the front lines. But the,
because David told him to come back?
They didn't kill him that way, he killed him over the front lines. Al-Pidin, he was Chayef Misa, and Al-Pidin, there was no Avera. But there was an Avera. The Avera was an emotional Avera. You're right. There was. There's no question about it. But we didn't say that a great person can't fall through emotionally. We didn't say that. A person, no matter how great he is, could always fall through. There's no question about that. The only thing is that the greatness of David was the fact that he recognized it, and the fact that he did chew on it. That was the greatness of David. Because emotions, since emotions are a part of a person, it's always possible at some time for the emotion to be very powerful and to force a guy to do something which is wrong. But the greatness of the person is that a great person, his mind and his emotions are two different things. So therefore his mind is capable of viewing his emotions. So that later, in retrospect, when the emotion isn't so powerful anymore, the mind can focus on the emotion and can see what the real reality is. At the time, the emotion clouds the real reality and can't see straight. But later, when the emotion is gone, so then the mind can look at the reality, at the situation, realistically, and see what he did, whether it was correct or incorrect. See, and that's tshuva. That's basically tshuva. That's what tshuva is. But the godless of David HaMelech was not that we don't have a godless. In Klal Yisrael, we do not have godless in terms of having people that didn't commit any errors. They didn't have such a thing. No such thing. I mean, the only what we do have is, by us, godless is a person who recognizes chait. But not to have chait, we don't have such a thing. As a matter of fact, the Gemara says there are only four people who didn't have a chait, and they're unknowns. You have Amram the Aaron and Moshe, and one of them you do know, Binyamin ben Yaakov, and Yishai Evi David, and
we do know
them. We don't know anything about them. And who was the last one? Was four. It's not possible to avoid chait. Chait is not possible to avoid. So it was what it called. It's tshuva. That's the only thing. That's the only possibility. Yeah. Oh, by Nasan Navi. So that was the So Nasan Navi was a very smart man. Showing the case in the objective.
Yeah, it's case also here.
Yeah.
They talk to God for
perfection. What other person must have? And that is that his emotions must be in contact with his intellect. There must be a connection there. If the person's emotions aren't in contact with his intellect, but the emotions are fixed, attached to specific things, he can't improve. There's no way he can improve. Like, let's say, for instance, you're going to show a person that if he does a certain thing, it's very harmful. But emotionally, he doesn't feel it's harmful. You know what I mean? In other words, the emotion, you see, a person has an emotion, an emotional reaction towards that which is good and towards that which is bad. If you tell a person, you know, we'll take you next week on a trip and on a vacation, you have a great time, and you said before him all the wonderful enjoyments he's going to have the next week, there's an emotional reaction that he has, a certain feeling. Wow, boy, great. Yeah, tell a person that he just won the lottery, right. So there's a certain emotional reaction that he has. You tell a person, on the other hand, that you just discovered that you're very ill and you won't live too long, there is another reaction that he has. See? Now, this reaction is always related to a certain knowledge. There's a connection between the knowledge of the mind, the mind recognizes knowledge, and also the emotion. Now, the only problem is that sometimes the connection is weak. When the connection is weak, it's very bad. Like, for instance, if you show a person how he's going to destroy his life, but it's not something which is directly involved in pleasure and pain. In other words, it's not something which is in the sensible, which is in the tangible. You just show him that this has to happen. Matter of course, chain of events. Like, for instance, you show a person, if you don't prepare now for the future, you take a kid, let's say a kid, 14-year-old kid, 10, 11-year-old kid, and you show him, you say, look, if you don't study now, you're not going to make anything out of yourself in life. You're going to suffer later. Now, if the child doesn't have, if the emotions are not related to that fact, you see, in other words, the fact remains in the abstract, so then the child cannot act upon that fact. Can't act upon that fact. You follow? Because there is no emotional reaction. There's no emotional reaction to the knowledge, and there's no interrelation between the knowledge and the emotion. Every reaction is always based upon this. Every time a person acts is always based upon that emotional reaction. Hey, that's good, I have to have that. This is bad, I better keep away. And that's why, for instance, the Rambam explains when a kid is very young. So you don't tell him you should learn Torah because it's good for you. He wouldn't understand this. Tell him learn Torah because after you get finished learning Torah, so then we'll give you some candy. Learn Torah because we'll give you some money. Learn Torah because we'll get you a bicycle, whatever, whatever it is. So all these, why do you do these things? Because these things, there's an emotional reaction. Is that right? Because these things, there's an emotional reaction to the. There's an emotional reaction. You see, now any movement that the human organism makes is based upon this emotional reaction. So really, what makes a chacham? What makes a chacham? A chacham is a person whose emotions are related in such a way to knowledge that he reacts emotionally based upon the truth. So he sees that he sees that he's destroying his life. He sees that he really isn't partaking of the real good. There's another good beyond the physical good. He sees this and his emotions react to it. I want it, I must have this. But if that connection is loose, you see, if he doesn't react to the knowledge, but his emotions remain attached to the physical, and his mind, as much as his mind will see the knowledge of the true good, there's nothing to make him move. Because I want to explain to you one thing. See, it is not logical. It is not logical for a person to do the good, per se. What I mean is like this. Let's say, for instance, you can prove to a person that this is the best life, and if a guy does this, then he's going to really have a good life here and in the next world as well. So therefore, if you're weighing an eternity and the quality of enjoyment here and there against the passing physical pleasures, then a person should definitely choose the illogical. It's not a question of logic. In other words, let's say, for instance, you have the whole world, right? And therefore, when one individual commits suicide, you say it's illogical. It's not illogical insofar as the person killed himself.
It's illogical based upon the principle that the person has certain desires, and it's illogical in the framework of his desires. But per se, it's not illogical. If one individual is blotted out of 100,000, 10 million, billion, right? Is that illogical? So there's one individual less. What's illogical about it? It's a fact. It's only illogical given the premise that there is an instinctual drive within the individual that he wants the good. There is a drive in the person for the good. Then it's illogical, because since you have this drive for the good, right, and you aren't taking the good, so that's illogical. It's illogical in the framework of his drive. But the drive itself, if you don't have the given drive, then it's not illogical. Because what do I get? So what? If one organism died, so what? It's not a matter of logic or not logic. It's true or false. You see? It's true, an organism died. It doesn't mean it's good or bad. See, good or bad is only within the context of the individual organism, insofar as the organism is attempting to achieve a certain goal. You follow? Now, if the achievement of that goal is strictly emotional, it's attached to a specific form of the good. It's attached to this form. Now, logically, as much as you're going to show the guy that he should be doing something else, but if the emotion isn't there, in other words, the instinctual drive is not there, cannot attach itself to the other thing.
Yes.
It doesn't work. Do you understand what I'm saying?
In other words, like this. It's still too abstract. You know what I mean? A person is after the good, right? He's after the... Now, the thing that makes him move is the fact that he's after the good. This emotion that he wants the good. You follow what I mean? Now, if the emotion remains attached to a specific good, let's say a person, his emotions remain attached to eating steak. That's the good. Okay? Now you're going to prove to him why it's better to do something else. It only has a value if the emotion is plastic, if the emotion can be shifted. If the emotion is attached to the general good, then you could show him that this is a better good than that. But if the emotion is attached to steak, so what good is it? You follow? Now, logically, in other words, it's like you're talking to a person that has no emotion to live. So go prove to a person. Let's say a person has no emotion to live. You're going to show him why it's better to do this and to live a certain way. But he has no emotion to live in the first place. You follow? So what are you going to show? What are you going to prove? It's only if the person has a desire to live, then you could say, well, if you have a desire to live, so then this is the best way to live. Correct? But if that desire is not there to begin with, so you have nothing to work with. You're going to prove to him logically it's better to live this way, but there's no desire to live, so what difference does it make? Logic doesn't dictate that he should live. Logic only dictates based upon the fact that he has a given desire that this is the best way to bring it about. You understand? This is the best way to express it. This is the best way to utilize this desire. But if the given desire isn't there, so then there's no way possible to advise this person. Because all your advice is worthless. A person is suicidal and you're going to advise him what the best type of profession is. Does it make any sense? It's great. I mean, you'll show him logically this is the right profession. 100% this is the best profession. But the man is suicidal. He's not interested in living, so what purpose is there? You follow what I mean? So the only way that a person could change is if the desire for the good is plastic. What do I mean by plastic? It could be attached to different things. So therefore, you could show him why this is the good, and he's capable of attaching that desire to anything which is the good. But if the desire is fixated, is attached to a specific good, you follow? There's no way to reason with him. Let's say his desire is attached to eating steak. That is the good, and the emotion, that's the only emotion that he has in life, is to eat steak. Nothing else. So what are you going to prove to him? You're going to prove to him that it's much better to spend your time doing something else, because in the long run you'll have more pleasure. It doesn't mean anything. This is the only thing that the man wants. There's nothing else. There's no general desire for good. There's a specific desire for steak. That's all. So outside of that desire for steak, there's no way to reach him. Unless, that's why the only person that could be raised to a higher level is a person whose desire for the good is one which isn't fixed to specifics, to specific pleasures. The moment it's fixed to specific pleasure, there's no way logically to reach the guy, because he has no desire to live in general. He doesn't have a desire to live a good life in general. He has a desire to live, to do these activities. That's all. You follow what I mean? So if the emotion is attached to specific, once the emotion is fixated to specific pleasures, then there is no way to reach it. The only way to reach the person is if his emotion is plastic. It's fixated to the good in general. And this and these specifics that he does are only expressions of that good. Then you can say to him, one second, why are you doing these things? You could be doing something else which is much greater. But if he's fixated to those things in specific, how are you going to reach him? There is no desire to live the good life in general. There is only desire to do specific activities, and there's no possible way to change that. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But I think
that'll dictate that a guy should live. That's not logic. Given that the guy has desire to live, then you have a framework to operate with. You have a basis. Now, let's say, for instance, it's attached to a specific thing. All the person wants in life is to go swimming. That's his whole life, nothing else. There's no desire for anything else. Now, how are you going to prove to him something else is better? He's not interested in the better. He's interested in a specific. He's fixed to a specific thing. You follow? Now, the question is, so your question is now,
how could you create a desire for the good?
How could you create a desire for the good?
And once you create a desire for the good?
How could you create a desire for the good? Practically, you want to know, right? So far, what we've said so far, you can't.
You can't.
We didn't say that you could. We didn't say that you could.
You said it had to be innate, right? You said it had to be innate and fluid.
Right.
And so far,
I can have it with a general desire. All right. I'm going to get back to that.
You can't this way.
You can only reason with the individual who wants to commit suicide based upon the fact that he has some desire to live. You see, when you reason with a suicidal man, you're reasoning with the hope that he has some desire to live, but there's something else that's causing him to, right now, not to see it. But deep down, you're trying to reach, what you're trying to do when you reason with a suicidal individual is reach that emotion to live, that desire to live. That's what you're trying to do. You should not go at that time and reason with him why he should now take a few courses in certain areas because it will be more important for his future. And that type of reasoning would be absurd. The only thing you try to do is try to reason with him that the situation isn't one which deserves killing himself. Then, because you know he has an underlying desire. Excuse me? He wants to live.
Yeah.
Where a person actually loses the will to live, you mean? Where it's gone, there's nothing underneath. You see, that I would say is like this. No. Because it is natural, every person has the instinct for survival. And the instinct for survival is a part of an individual just as much as his heart or his lungs or anything else. And just like you don't find an individual without a heart, or at least we haven't found any, so you will not find an individual without the instinct to live. I mean, it's something which is part of the human race as a whole. The desire to live with them is there, but there's something else which is causing the sway of the balance in favor of death. In other words, the desire to live is there, but there's something else which is very painful, which is blocking out, overriding. There's an override. Something's overriding the desire. But it's not that the desire doesn't exist. That's the only obvious assumption, is that the desire is there. Desire to live is there. But the only thing is there's something overriding it. Is he making it malfunction?
Is there anything that should be like that?
That would cause that?
Yeah.
What pain? Tremendous amount of pain. Whether it's psychological or physical, whatever it is. Pain will override the desire because the pain is too great. It can't go on. We haven't found anybody that does not have that desire. Psychologists have not found such a thing. What they found is the person that has the desire, and there's something overriding it, but not that there is a person without the desire. That we don't find. How could you find that?
You would say that this person,
seeing that there are expressions of that other part of it. See? Yeah. He does have the desire.
I understand, but that's where it is.
Yeah, in other words, the override is so powerful that you cannot get to that emotion. Can't decide. He's
definitely.
In other words, a person who is suicidal to the point where the emotion is overridden to such a degree that he can't get to that emotion anymore, then there's nothing to talk about. Then forget it. See?
the motives are so detached
from the
inner
part. Yeah. Who wants to die? There's no way. Then there's no way to reach the person. Because what are you going to do? What kind of logic are you going to use? It's not logical that an individual should die or live per se. It's not a logical proposition. So it's not logical that you should live or die. What do you mean it's not logical? If I die, I die. If I don't, I don't. I mean, there's nothing logical or illogical. The only thing is logical or illogical is based upon your desire to live. Then a certain way of life is logical or illogical. But if there is no desire, you can't say, could you say to an individual, it's not logical for you to not to have a desire to live. That's not logical that you don't have a desire to live. What do you mean it's not logical? It's a fact. So you can't argue with logic based upon a certain framework. The logic is only within the framework. And the framework is the desire to live. Now the thing is like this. Now the question that he asked. Any other question?
Yes.
Sorry, you have a question?
Me?
No, person. Depends on the person. Depends on the person.
Well, the guy loves yes.
Himself. Yes, but that's very life. He's fixed to this thing. He
so
can't. You have to deal with universals, but if he doesn't deal with universals, he can't. Could you tell a monkey that he shouldn't eat bananas?
No.
Tell him logically. What do you like? You like this and like that. So therefore, maybe you'll try another food that has the same quality. Forget it. It's impossible. Because he's programmed to eat bananas. That's it.
He can't change. That's it.
He can't change.
You can't see the point.
He's fixed to this object. He's not dealing in universals. If a person... See, if an individual is dealing in universals, then you could change him. But if he's not dealing, his mind isn't attached to universals. His mind is attached to particular. In other words, he's attached to the particular enjoyment of swimming. Now, you're trying to say, but what is your enjoyment? You enjoy this factor and that factor. That's universals already. His emotion isn't attached to universals. So the moment you universalize, the emotion's gone. That's it. So it's as if he does not have any desire to live in that area. And that's it. There's nothing to reason with. You follow? Ah. Now, the truth of the matter is that can a person like that be helped, right? That's the question. The truth of the matter is that that's basically what happened with Adam Arishon. The moment that Adam Arishon's emotions, you see, became attached to the physical in the first instance, so he would have, if it wasn't for the fact that God gave him a conscience to counteract it, he would have been gone. Why would he have been gone? Because the emotion would have been fixed to the physical and that would be it. There's no way that you could have possibly changed his way of life. What are you going to say to him? You're going to say to him, look, it's much better for you to live a life of chachma. Yeah, you're going to show him rationally it's better. But the emotion is fixed to the physical. It's attached to this physical thing and you can't budge. You understand what I mean? In other words, the instinctual forces are very powerful. Right? Now, instinctual forces attach themselves to specific objects. Correct? So insofar as they attach to specific objects, they aren't capable of change because the instinct isn't to have a general pleasure. A bird doesn't have a general idea of a building for its eggs. It's fixed to a specific object of a nest, right? That's why even if you have a bird in the house, he's going to build a nest because it doesn't need it there. But the instinct is fixed, programmed to this object. It's an amazing thing because really the nest is built with the greatest chokmah. You know, it's like it's an architectural wonder, an architectural marvel. But the bird doesn't understand anything about that. The bird just has an emotion, an instinct attached to these specific stages. You understand what I mean? In other words, as an instinct to find the right tree, find the perfect tree, which is positioned perfectly, an instinct to use mud in the first instance, an instinct to use something else next, an instinct to, you understand? It's all a series of instincts. He's programmed. The real designer of the nest is God, but God programmed the bird to go through certain actions. The bird has no idea of the knowledge. His action comes out that he built a fantastic thing. It takes tremendous chachma to work it out. But he doesn't know himself. He doesn't understand the chacham himself. It's an instinctual thing. His instinct is fixed to this object. So therefore, if you will tell a bird, my friend, you're in a living room now, there's no need for this nest. You see? There will be, there will never be any change in the bird. Why? The way they do it is, like you put a strainer in the cage. Like it looks like a strainer. You know what a strainer is? Like a round. Give the bird the best ready-made built nest. Right? He'll still weave. He has to weave. A certain amount he can get away with. He doesn't have to do the basis all the time. Apparently, a certain amount is optional. In other words, if, you understand what I mean? If the basis is there, he will only weave the top part. But that's how the instinct is programmed. This is all Chochmas Hashem. It's a tremendous thing. How it works. But the desire, the instinct is attached to weaving. It has to weave. So you can't just put it in the nest. Now, the same thing with man. Insofar as Adam Rishon was concerned, his instinct was attached to specifics. You couldn't change him. There would be no way that he'd ever reach the world of Chochmah. He could never get over the bridge. Why? Because since the instincts are attached to the physical, in specific, not to universals, so he wouldn't budge. That's it. That would be the end of it. You understand why? You understand why? That thing. It's not an instinct to have. If the instinct was to have the best home, so then he could maneuver. He would be. Yes, and then he'd be capable of change. Because all he wants is his desire is attached to a universal idea. So he can live a better way. But if his desire is attached to a specific, you can show him the things that are much better. He'll never be able to budge. Because the instinct attaches to the specific. That's the same thing over here. That's why Adam Rishon had to have a counterforce, which is the conscience. You see, now the conscience goes against the instincts. Once the two are in conflict, it removes the hold of the instincts. And once the hold is removed, and the specific from the instincts, then he could go for the universal good. Do you follow what I mean? But as long as that hold on the specific object of the instinct is not removed, it's tight, can't loosen it. Then, insofar as that is so, you could never talk to the person. There is no way to reach the person, because his instinct is fixed to this one thing. It's not fixed to a general good. Okay? Yes.
No.
It's like this. So, what happens to the individual who is fixed to the physical? He's attached physically to the pleasures. In other words, his instinct is directly to specific physical pleasures. So, as much as you're going to argue, you're going to show him why something else is better, it's not going to be any good because he's attached to these specifics. There's no rationale, no reasoning with the guy. The answer is like this. The answer is we have to theoretically ask one question: is man inherently fixed to specifics? You understand? Which means that's it. It's all over. Or the pshat is like this. The pshat is that really he really can be attached to the universal. He can be attached. But there's something there which is changing the situation, causing him to be attached to specifics. You understand what I mean?
Both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. It's just like the override on the suicidal. See, is there an override there? Is there an override there? Or the pshat is that this is the way his nature is. His nature is attached to these specific objects, and that's all. Basically, the whole bechira is... What's the whole bechira in life really is to be able to remove this attachment to the specific pleasures. That's the whole bechira. That's the whole bechira in life. The whole thing is because the individual, the instincts are attached to these specifics. See? And the only bechira that there is to remove yourself from the specific things that the instinct is attached to. But basically, man is not... The question of, is man an instinctual creature or not? Is man an instinctual creature? How is man's instinct different from the animal? How is man's instinct different from the animal? The answer is, man's... What? Yeah. The difference is because it can express itself in universals. It can express itself in universals. Now the thing is like this. If that is the case, so the question is, when a person... That's what the Rambam calls chuliyah nefesh. Chuliyah nefesh means that when the person is in a state of illness, but not physical illness, but illness of his psyche. In other words, his psyche is in such a condition that he doesn't respond like a human being. In other words, his psyche should respond to the general good, and it's fixed to the specific. That would be a chuliyah nefesh. He'd be reacting like a kid, just like a kid is fixed. The only job to him is ice cream. That's it. Now you're going to tell him that this is great. You can't talk. This is attached to this. That's why it's absurd to reason with a child.
Because the child, why is the reasoning fail with a child? You analyze, why does it fail? Reasoning is good, right? The answer is because the child is incapable of operating in terms of universals. The child only is fixed to this is what they want. The instincts attached to this thing. And there's no if beyond that, it's impossible to reason. You follow? Now, if an individual is as such, in which case he is still in that stage, so his instinct is attached to these specifics, then there's only one thing to do. That's what the Rambam says. What's the Rambam saying? To loosen the hold on the specifics. That's why the Rambam says he has to go to the opposite extreme.
In other words, for instance.
He has to go to the opposite extreme. For instance, the Rambam says, let's say, for instance, a person is attached to the idea of to the physical instinct of eating, like this is his whole life. So the eating is has an instinctual hold on him. So what he has to do is go to the opposite extreme, completely break away from it. Why? Because by doing that, he loosens the hold of the instinct on the specific. Let's say a person's any meter that way. Person's instinct is attached to misery. He's a miser, attached to saving money. Yes, the instinct is attached to this specific. Why can't he reason? But he sees now people. There are people who have this instinct, and they borrow money, you know. But they live miserably. They can't put their hands in their pockets. Why? Don't they understand universally? He'll explain to them, look, what's the purpose of life is to enjoy it. What's the purpose of money to enjoy it? I mean, here it can't be any more absurd than in this case. And what are you doing? You can't spend a penny. Every time you spend money, you're sick for 2 days. So, what kind of sense does it make? Yeah, but the person won't change. Why? Because if he was attached to the universal concept of living good, you see, then you're right. You're right, that he'd be able to do it. But he isn't. The instinct is attached to saving money. The instinct has a hold on this specific. Insofar as this is the specific, so then all the universals don't do any good. Then the only way is to go to the other extreme, to become a spendthrift. Why? Because by doing that, he loosens the grip, he loosens the hold of the instinct on its object.
Hope he arrives at a neutral.
Now, once he loosens the hold of the instinct on its object, then he could operate again in terms of universals. You see? But as long as the instinct has a hold on a specific, and expresses itself in a specific way, there is no way to reason. Of course, what are you going to reason with? Reasoning can only be, I want something which is good, but if reasoning is, I want this, then there's no talking about it. Can't talk about it anymore. Yeah, that's the point. That's why the Rambam says, the Rambam maintains that every normal person, of course there's abnormalities, but every normal person really is capable of loosening the vice of the instinct on the object. See? He's capable of it. Because man is constructed in such a way that he could do that. You understand what I mean? But in certain situations he might have to go through certain procedures before he could really do this.
Okay.
See, that's chulei nefesh. Chulei nefesh means where he is not completely a human being at this point, because a human being by definition means one whose instincts are not attached to specific. The desire is not attached to specific, but the desire is attached to a general, universal good. Huh? But if he finds out of this condition, then he has to help himself, because if he doesn't, he's going to he could lose his whole life. Yes. Instinct would be a component of the good. If you assure a person that if he has sex in this instance, he's going to die, he won't do it. See?
The universe is always is the general good.
Right. In other words, if the sexual, this is a case. It isn't between an Adam and a behemoth. A behemoth is attached. Let's say a behemoth has sexual instinct, but this act of sex is going to require, he will contract a disease that will kill him. So you can't reason with him. We're going to reason with him. Because the instinct is the instinct, just to do the act of sex, right? But in man, insofar as he's reasonable, in this case, if he knows it's going to result in his death, so he won't do it. Why? Because the instinct is really an expression of the good. He's attached to the good.